1 hour to go. Corey Curtis filling in for Jared Stillman on this fine Friday afternoon with Titans GM extraordinaire Floyd Reese. Floyd, how big of a bucket list moment was being the Houston Oilers Tennessee Titans GM for you?
You know, it when I coached for a long time, as you well know, and I'd gotten to a point in my coaching career where I was convinced I wasn't going to get an opportunity to be a head coach. And at that point I said, you know, the only other thing I can do to have an effect on a franchise, you know, to be able to really put something together would be, you know, as a GM. And so for me to get the opportunity, first of all, was a shock. And then to get the actual job is a real thrill.
How long did that take you to get there from the time you decided you were going to do that?
I was assistant GM for 3 years. And the only thing I hadn't done as a coach was I hadn't done a great job of studying the defensive side of the ball, because I was a defensive coach. So everything they did on offense and every player on offense, I knew. Mm-hmm. I was down. So I had to look at the defensive side and then get into the college ball. And so for 3 years, that's all I did. Watch film, go on trips, watch film, go on trips, watch film. I did that for 3 years. So when it was my turn, I was ready.
You got the big chair. Yeah. John Robinson's got the big chair. Now, I would argue this is the point where his job gets harder. You know, he took over a team that was terrible and, you know, had a lot of pieces to fill, and he's filled a lot of those pieces. Now, though, as he's added some good pieces, as you talked about before, this is where the really hard decisions come into play. Who stays, who goes, who gets how much? What's your squealing point? Because everybody's got a squealing point. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy's worth this much to us. If he won't take it, we're just going to have to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. I think this could be the most challenging offseason he will face in his time as the Titans GM. Not ever, but to this point.
Sure.
Because as we approach 2020, and again, any of these guys could get a deal before then. But as we approach 2020, these names are all entering the final year of their contract. Marcus Mariota, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, Austin Johnson, Jack Conklin, Logan Ryan, Ben Jones, and I believe Wesley Woodyard. There are a lot of good football players.
Yeah, there are.
On that list.
Yep. And I think you're right. I mean, this is I think J-Rob's done a great job, but let's be honest. I mean, this roster three or four years ago was so bad.
You didn't have to make these decisions.
Yeah, you could have drafted anybody, and they were going to come in and play. It didn't make any difference.
And if you had a good player, you were just going to keep him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, shoot, he had $30, $40 million in cap space,
yeah.
So that wasn't an issue. Now suddenly cap space is becoming more of an issue. You know, your quarterback's not going to be on his rookie deal anymore. You've got issues here. So we need to prioritize this list. So by prioritizing number one, I'm going to say to you, which one of these guys, for you, you want to get an extension done before 2019 season begins?
Before the 2019 season?
Would you extend any of these guys or contemplate extending any of these guys before this season begins?
Yeah, I think I probably would. I think I would probably talk to you'd have to talk to Byard. Yep. And I think who's the other? Is that Johnson?
Yeah, if you could get an affordable deal.
There you go. You want somebody that you're not going to pay the top dollar to.
But you give them some security.
Yep, they're going to. And you sell them on the fact that, hey, yep, I'm signing you now because I want you here for the next, you know, 7 years, whatever it is. And so I think I would do that one. And then, you know, if you were to sign Woodyard, and I don't know how old Woodyard is, but if you
he's getting there.
Yeah, I mean, he's played a long time and had a fantastic career. That would probably be easy from the standpoint you're not talking long term.
Yeah, you know, and you're probably not talking a ton of money either.
Yeah, you're talking about a little contract. We love you. We want to keep you, which is all true. And would you be willing to do this?
Been the captain every year of his football
career. Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Back to high school.
And he is not gonna get the value
on the open
market, simply because of all the other things. So you might be able to get a deal like that done, and I think I'd probably investigate those.
All right. Corey Curtis with Floyd Reese talking about the Titans free agents coming up in 2020. So we've got Kevin Byard and Austin Johnson who are approaching with longer term deals. So we're putting them priority one. And then we're looking at Wesley Woodyard as maybe a 1 year extension before the season because we like having him around and he's affordable. I think the rest of them, look, I think the next level is Mariota, Henry, and Conklin. And they're all largely the same. They're all in prove-it years.
They're all in prove-it years. They're all young guys. They're all hopefully, you know, improving, getting better and better. And you would love to be able to sign those guys and keep them around long-term, knowing that it's not going to be cheap.
Yeah. Now, having said that, so the Titans go 11-5, and they average 25.5 points a game. You know, they're largely better on offense. You know, Derrick Henry has had a good year. You know, he's gone for 1,180 yards and 7 or 10 touchdowns, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Jack Conklin's been solid for it in the offensive line. You know, Mariota is still priority one because that is the position in the National Football League. He's got to get done first.
Without a doubt. And of course, that contract's going to be the one that'll knock your socks off.
Yeah.
You know,
but you know that already.
Yeah.
You know this deal. Look, if Marcus Mariota is the Titans quarterback in 2020, you can pencil it in right now. He's going to make $25 to $29 million. Probably something like that.
Probably.
I mean, you just know it.
That's going to have – that will be such a giant hit on your cap that it will help you with the rest of these guys because yeah. There'll be some guys that you'll be saying, okay, you know what? I can give you $7 million a year for 5 years. Well, that's it.
And
he says, well, I can already get nine out there. Then it's – okay, see ya.
See, that's why Logan Ryan makes $10 million a year.
Yeah.
If you're going to pay Kevin Byard, you're going to have a hard time. I guess it would depend how much money Logan Ryan wants to come back.
I think that's part of it, and I think that hopefully Logan is getting to the point where he realizes he's living in a great place.
Yeah.
You know, they love him. He loves them. He's going to make good money, but you can't make $10 million a year.
And they've also drafted a guy that could potentially replace
him. So, you know, I can pay you – I don't know, 4.5 a year, whatever the number is.
Yeah, we'll give you 2 years and 9 million.
There you go.
We'll give you $3 million to sign.
We'll give you a couple of years with that, and we'll make sure that you're here. We're going to make sure that you're part of the team. We're going to make sure of all of those good things. But, you know, you're just not a $10 million a year player anymore.
Yeah. So he's, because of his age and of his price, he comes kind of towards the bottom of the list. So after Mariota, and then you've got Henry and Conklin.
Yeah, Conklin. Assuming Conklin is the right tackle we're talking about.
Okay, so but if he's the right tackle you're talking about, I just think you have no prayer of signing him.
Which very well could be true.
I mean, because somebody's going to pay him more than – you are already paying Lawan a massive deal.
Yep.
And you could offer him – I mean, you could offer Jack $13 million a year. There is somebody out there that's going to pay if they think he's their left tackle, they're going to give him Lawan money. I mean, we've seen it over and over again.
And if that's the case, then you're going to lose him.
Yep.
And then you jump right back on Henry. You sign Henry because now you'll know you'll have more than enough money to sign him. And, you know, you're off and running. Now you're looking for a right tackle.
So Derrick Henry has, you know, he's not the NFL's leading rusher, but he has a very good year. You know, he follows up the last four games of last year with a good year.
Yeah.
Like a year that answers a lot of questions.
Yeah.
How much does he draw? Because he's going to want a lot, and his agent's going to sell it that he was just underused until then, and now he's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, I'm sure. But, I mean, as much as I like Derek, I mean, he is not Todd Gurley. You know, he is not of that.
Alvin Kamara.
No, he's not of that ilk.
No. He's more one-dimensional.
And mainly because of his versatility. You know, Kamara can go out and – I mean, Kamara could be like the kid at Carolina and catch 100 balls, you know? I mean, And Henry's just never going to do that. Now, is he a big, strong running back? Is he a critical part of our team? Do we love him? Yeah, we do. But, you know, we can pay you, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, whatever the number is, mm-hmm. you know, and give you a contract to keep you here, mm-hmm. you know, so that you'll start and finish as a Titan and be the guy. And and hopefully you can sell them on that. Now, if there was a guy I would think that would not maybe like that deal and say, I have to go out there and look, it may be him. I think once he gets out there and looks, he may say, you know what? I like you guys. let me come back.
Are you going to draft a running back? Because if no, I want to come back.
Yeah.
So you've seen this list.
Yeah.
How many of you guys, these guys, you think are back next year? And I know a number of them are improving years, so that makes it really tough to guess.
Yeah. I mean, I would think if you want to sign everybody.
Yeah.
I would think you could get Marcus signed. I would think you could get Henry signed.
Byard.
I would think you could get Byard
Johnson.
Signed. Johnson. Who's that next one?
After Johnson?
Yeah.
Conklin.
Conklin would be shaky.
I think Jack's a tough sign no matter what.
Yeah. Ryan, I think, will want to come back, or he will have to want to come back.
Yes.
You know? And then Woodyard will have to understand that, you know, a couple-year contract and what we can pay you, and we'd love you, and you know, or because again, those guys, like, we're just not going to have that appeal out there.
Yeah.
That, you know, there'll be people that want to sign them, but they'll want to sign them for, you know, $2 million a year.
Yeah, so. I mean, like, you know, Ben Jones and Logan Ryan and Wesley Woodyard, they're at the point of their career where they have more value here,
yeah,
than they have on the open
and,
market.
And
I
always
mean,
used
Derek
to
Morgan right now.
Yeah, I always used to try to structure the contracts. Now, they didn't go for this very often, but I would try to structure it so that, okay, we're going to pay you, and this is just an example. If you are at a point in time, if you're at, say, 25, and we expect you to play to 30, I'll pay you $1 million this year. I'll pay you $2 million next year. I'll pay you $4 million next year. Then I'll pay you $3 million, and then I'll pay you $2 million. You know, so that when you got to that last 30 year, you were still the starter and still playing, but you weren't as productive as you were at 25.
That's the way the Preds have produced
and,
a lot of contracts.
Yeah, and if you can do that, it's really, really good. But like I said, they generally thinking, generally speaking, just laugh at you.
All right. Well, we talked about a little bit earlier that when John Robinson made the bold move to trade the first pick of the draft, he is now looking at Derrick Henry, Austin Johnson, and Jack Conklin, and Kevin Dodd, who's already gone, all possibly being gone. All the picks, not all the picks, but all the picks that year from that trade being gone after 2019. Should we judge him on that? Should we judge him on if they'll return? And is it fair to judge John Robinson at all with Marcus Mariota as the quarterback because he didn't draft him?
Yeah, well, this is what's hard, I think. It's hard. How would you judge him on Conklin? Let's say Conklin came back next year and was Pro Bowl caliber tackle.
Yeah, he hit him.
It was a hit, a huge success.
The only fail on that is you drafted him in the top 10, so you couldn't re-sign
him. Yeah, so you couldn't re-sign him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not a fail of the draft. That's a fail of
the system.
Of management of the cap or whatever, you know, whatever that falls under.
All right, well, we're going to talk more about that on the other side of this break. Judging the job John Robinson's done, what are the most important pieces and decisions he's made that really should determine what we think of his first few years on the job here in Nashville? Corey Curtis filling in for Jared Stillman. This is Jared and the GM. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Friday afternoon, Corey Curtis sitting in for Jared Stillman on Jared and the GM. Did you hear when they called you guys Gerald and the Coach?
You know what?
I was listening. It was on the morning show. Oh, my gosh. I think I ruptured my spleen.
That was so funny.
I listen to Gerald and the Coach every day. Oh, yeah, you're a big fan. It's like when people come up to me and they go, oh, yeah, you do the weather. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I watch news, too, every day. I know you do. I know you do. Yep, I appreciate it. It's going to be cloudy and cool. Chance of rain. 70 degrees. That's just the way it is.
That was fantastic.
Gerald and the Coach. Jared is, you know what? It's great to have that guy that can be the punching bag.
Oh yeah,
he might be Nashville's best punching bag.
Yeah, and he never gets insulted. You know, he just laughs it off.
Just get his name right.
There you go,
Gerald. And you could, we could call you the coach.
Oh, sure.
You were a coach.
Yeah.
So what did you have your players call you when you were the Titans GM?
Oh.
Mr. Reese or Floyd?
No, anything they wanted to. Some, it depended on how they, if they knew me old school, they called me Sarge. Where it came from, I have no idea.
Sarge?
Yeah.
Were you in the Army?
No, but that was the name when I finished coaching, so the old-timers would call me that, and then I think most of the others just call me Floyd.
Okay, yeah. Floyd. All right. Floyd, there it goes. All right, well, we talked about John Robinson and kind of judging his tenure. Can you give me, and I guess I could have given this to you in the break, what are the most important moves he's made that he needs to be judged on right now?
Well, I mean, I think, and this is the kind of overlook of the whole thing. When he took over and whenever it was, I mean, this was the worst roster in the NFL.
It was terrible.
I mean, it was awful, awful roster. And now they've won three
winning seasons,
yeah, in a row. I think back then, you had no players. You didn't have anybody that, you know, you had a young quarterback and that was about it. You know, left tackle, maybe a tight end. I mean, you didn't have any other starting linemen. You didn't, your defense was horrendous. You just didn't have. So you say, okay, well, where are we now? And you look at it now and you go, secondary is full and complete.
Mm-hmm.
Linebackers, full and complete. Defensive line, improving, can still use maybe a guy here or there. Receiving group, I think, is full. Hopefully it's complete. Offensive line, you need a right guard. And you've got a quarterback and you've got a running back that have a chance. So, you know, you've taken it from just horrible to, and I said this all along, you're to a point where you can contend for the playoffs on a yearly basis.
Okay.
And when you get to that point, then there's still a step or two you want to go to get to the ultimate prize, but at least you're going to get invitations to the dance. Mm-hmm. And if you get an invite to the dance, who knows what's going to happen, you know? And I think he's gotten us to that point. And I think that, you know, he's done a good job with the draft. I think he's done a good job with free agency without breaking the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been very selective and generally speaking brought in, you know, the Wesley
Woodyard. The Malcolm Butler deal was a lot of money.
That was a big money.
Was a lot of money.
And I think you're going to, that's like this next step we take is going to involve a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to, now you're
how
not filling holes.
How he handles the cap is his next challenge.
Yes. Now you're not filling holes. Now you are making us better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, how do you make us better? And when you get to that point, then I think you're saying, okay, you know, we're going to make the playoffs on a year basis. Now we want to be a threat in the playoffs. You know, we've got to move along a little bit. And then of course you get to that bottom line where you're saying to yourself, you know, I got one hole on this team, one hole. And I got to, whatever it's going to cost, however I got to spend, whoever I got to draft, I got to fill that hole.
And then suddenly next year when you fill that hole, four more holes pop up.
There you go, which is always what happens.
Yes.
But at least at that point in time, you feel like, okay, we can contend.
All right, so the number one thing he should be judged on is his ability to build the roster, which he's done.
Oh, yeah,
in the future, you think the most important thing he'll be judged on is how he handles the cap.
Very well, yeah, very likely. Now, he's got Vin Marino with him, and Vin is very, very good.
I love when those contracts show up on, like, SpoTrack and Over the Cap and seeing how they're constructed.
Yeah.
Because this year they were constructed way differently than they have been in years past. Years past, all those contracts were escapable after, like, 2 years. This year, the deals are more loaded to keeping players here. I mean, Saffold's here for 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no escaping that one.
And I think they are, because you're trying to allure, you know, better players.
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, since John got here, one of the first guys he signed, I think, was Levitre,
mm-hmm.
who's now
Robinson?
Yeah.
No, Rustin Webster signed.
Oh, he signed the Vitre.
And then they switched blocking schemes to a power blocking scheme from a zone blocking scheme. And so Rustin traded him to Atlanta. And then 4 weeks later, they switched back to a zone blocking scheme because it suited the personnel better, and Lavitre was already a foul man because that was Ken Wisenhunt.
Well, I think that was the kind, you know, those were the caliber guys that they were bringing, and now you're bringing in a Saffold. And I'm not only talking about this from a contract standpoint. You know, now Saffold's coming in. He's a higher profile guy. He's a Pro Bowl caliber guy. He's a Super Bowl caliber guy. He's the kind of guy you want. But guess what? Got to pay for those guys.
Yep. Yeah, they're not free. And especially to get him to leave the team that he was on that was just in the Super Bowl. There are a couple of large decisions that I think people will judge him on. You know, the decision to fire Mike Mularkey and move on to Mike Vrabel. We can argue why it happened. Should it have happened? You know, was it destined to happen? Doesn't matter. That is going to be one of the things he's judged on. If Mike Vrabel's a success, then he will be deemed a genius for that decision.
All right.
So the coaching change. And then what will always go down for him is trading away the first pick of the draft. I don't think anybody begrudges him for trading away the first pick of the draft. But, you know, did he succeed enough with the haul of picks that he got? Because it looked like when he made that deal with the Rams, you know, he just nailed it, but you still got to nail the picks.
And you know, the hard part with nailing the picks, it's just like we were talking about with Conklin, you know, is that, do you consider that a nail or a fail?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's going to be hard to, the thing with the number one pick is that it's the same thing. You know, you're a team in trouble. You've got to fill a dozen holes and you can make one trade and fill four or five of them. You know, that's the plan. So you say, okay, we're going to make this trade just because we can fill four or five of these holes and move on with it. And maybe you do, maybe you don't. But that's that. You know, in theory, that's what you're trying to do.
And then we look at all these things, handling the cap, building roster, coaching change, trading the first pick. And you know what? None of them matter if Marcus Mariota doesn't stay healthy.
I mean, the really scary part is if Marcus, for whatever reason, doesn't turn out to be the guy, and here you are literally a right guard that is a giant question mark away from maybe being a fairly complete team. Now you're starting all over.
Yep, it's just like putting a pin in the balloon.
That's it. And by the time you start all over, you know, by the time this next guy gets to a point he can play, well, you know, Derrick Henry's gone. And
Casey's done.
Will be true with a number of these names.
And that's why when you say, why are they so invested in helping Marcus succeed this year?
Oh, yeah.
Because they need him to be the guy. And he has shown them he can be the guy. I mean, 2017, he had a really good year.
Yeah.
And
having been through, I mean, this is the very situation we were in 1999. When we moved here with the new season, the Super Bowl year, because you know, we had a young quarterback. You're hoping he's going to be the real deal. We had an Ed George. I think you're pretty sure about him. Offensive line is pretty salty. You know, you're getting to the point where you like your defensive team. You got to get a pass rusher. You got to get this and that and the other.
We're close, baby.
Yeah, and
you can taste
know
it.
You're close. So then you go out and you draft a curse, and he hits, and it's a huge success, and you go to the Super Bowl, and you've still got all these guys that are in their fourth and fifth and sixth year, and you're going, my God, we got a chance to be pretty good for a number
of
years.
We're a dynasty! Wait, we didn't get back to the Super Bowl.
Prayer.
What happened?
And so you literally sell your soul to keep that together, and then you end up fired. That's the tale of that story.
You know what? There's two kinds of people, those that have been fired and those that are going to be fired.
Amen.
All right. Which young skill player are you most concerned about stepping up for the Titans in this next season? Could be offense or defense. We're going to talk about that next. When we return, Corey Curtis filling in for Jared Stillman. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Corey Davis is someone who I absolutely loved coming out of college. I thought he had as good of route running ability and catch and run ability as any wide receiver you will see coming into the draft. I thought he had Amari Cooper, and I caution to say this next guy's name, but when I watched Corey run, look, I played against Jerry Rice. Corey has a very similar gait, a very similar body movement style to that. And I thought, if this guy can just stay healthy and they can just develop this passing game in Tennessee and Marcus can stay healthy, they can develop a rapport, he can be as good as any receiver in this league. I still do believe that. It's just a matter of him staying healthy, staying on the field, Marcus staying on the field, and the coaching staff being able to put these guys in positions to where they're able to shine.
ESPN's Lewis Riddick talking Corey Davis as we talk about the young player who's going to step up for the Tennessee Titans. Who are you most concerned about stepping up for the Tennessee Titans? Corey Curtis from News 2 filling in for Jarrett Stillman on this Friday afternoon, sitting in with Floyd Reese. I really like Corey Davis. What do you have, 664 receptions, 891 yards last year, only four touchdowns. But like I say, game-winning touchdown to beat the Jets, game-winning touchdown to beat the Eagles, and he was a force in that Eagles game. Mm-hmm. And I think your old squad, the New England Patriots, got an eyeful of Corey Davis in back-to-back performances against them. Look, I think this kid can be really good. He's aggressive to the football. He runs with ferocity. If he had a healthy Mariota for 16 games last year, he's a 1,000-yard receiver easily. I'm not making him out to be the second coming, but can he be a number one? Yeah, I think he can be a number one. Look, he's been asked to be the number one since he walked in the door here.
Right. It was almost thrown at him.
Yeah, because they didn't have another choice. Yeah. That's how bad the position's been here.
You're the only receiver we got. You're number one.
But so, Lewis Riddick, most concerned about him. Gosh, pro football talk with, what's his name? Mike Florio?
Yeah.
He was talking about him. I was on your show last week when you guys played me that moronic clip
about
Florio to a Patterson game to Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, have you watched the Titans play ever? Look, the guy was healthy for 16 games last year. For some reason, people think he wasn't. He was healthy for 16 games last year. Some games were down and not as good as they need to be. But you know what I call that? Being a young player.
A young player, an inconsistent quarterback, running game.
Blaine Gabbert, your quarterback. Your quarterback can't feel his hand half the time. I mean, look, 64 for 890. It's not bad in year two when year one is almost a wash, because even when you're healthy, you're not healthy.
Yeah, I agree.
So I of the players the Titans have, Corey Davis is not a concern for me. I think I know what I'm going to get from him.
I feel better about Corey than I have for a long time, because simply I think you're right. I think you need to sit down and really look at the numbers and realize that, you know what, gaining 900 yards in the NFL, your second year, I mean, would you like him to gain 1,200? Sure you would, you know, but there's
and
a lot of second
year. With a healthy Mariota, he may have done that.
And there's a lot of second year guys that gain 300. So, you know, what he got is really a pretty good year. And I'm kind of like you. I mean, I think he and Marcus have finally worked enough together where they've resolved any. I really think Arthur and what Arthur's going to do with these guys will help.
Yeah.
I mean, he will limit the number of mistakes, limit the number of errors. And I think consequently both of those guys will, you know, get positive results from that.
And Corey also played in the mid-major level. And so he's had 2 years to adapt to it, the step up in competition as well. And also, you know, last year he was the Titans' only target, so defenses were completely focused on him.
Oh,
so he's had a year to adapt to that as well. He's got more people around him that should help him get up. He is not the young guy that I worry about. Who is the young guy that you worry about? And I don't know what defines young guy.
Well, yeah, I don't know either. I guess I probably worry most about Derrick Henry. From this standpoint,
you beat me to the punch.
From this standpoint, what his production is going to have such a dramatic effect on this football team.
Yeah, you know, I completely
agree.
They are
going to have to be able to run the football. They're going to have to be able to run the football effectively to have Marcus, to help Marcus have a chance, to help the offensive line, to help the defense, to help literally everything that we can do. Now, you know, when you say, okay, you put somebody in that position, you know, it may be hard to find somebody better equipped to do it. I mean, you know, in high school, he ran, you know, set national records running the ball. I mean, we know Nick wore him down at Alabama. And
running through crater-sized holes. Yeah. Now, he really took a beating there.
Oh, yeah. And now he's, you know, if you tell him, hey, you got to go out and carry 25 times a game, I mean, he'll be up for that. He'll be okay with that. So, I mean, I think he will have the one. He will be the one to have the most dramatic effect on the team.
I like that pick. Like that's where I was going to go. I think Derrick Henry playing well is hugely important. I still don't think people understand how close David Flewellen was to taking carries away from him last year before he got hurt. So I'll pick a guy on defense who I think can take this team from good to great if he can elevate his game a level or two, and that's Harold Landry.
Ooh, the word name right out of my mouth.
If he can be an 8 to 12 sack guy, he can transform this team, can he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that has been exciting about him is that he's been one of those, shown that he can be one of those strip sack guys.
He's won two games for them. I mean, yeah. I think it was Dallas and Philadelphia. He made huge plays
exactly.
in those games.
And it's not just can he get there. He can get there. But he also has a knack for getting the ball out. He has a knack for doing those kinds of things. And those are, as you put it earlier, those are game-winning plays. You know, those are the kinds of thing that you're in the fourth quarter and they're trying to catch up and you need somebody to get a sack all of a sudden to strip. You get the ball, you win the game.
But you just described the Eagle game because they don't win that game without his strip sack and Carson Wentz. Yeah. It was an electric play, and he can be a difference maker. I think what's really exciting, though, for the Tennessee Titans is we're not talking about rookies because we're not counting on rookies to come in and change the team, where in years past, we might have said Corey Davis in year one because, my Lord, they needed him.
Sure.
And so, you know, and we're not looking for guys to be something they aren't or something they can't. We're just looking for them to take the next step.
That's it. That's it. And there's a whole group there. And if they all take it together, which, you know, you have to, I mean, you know, they're not all going to take it.
No.
You know, but do I think Corey can? Yes. Do I think Derek can? Yes. Do I think Conklin can play right tackle? Yes. Do I think, and if you get a bunch of those things, I mean, then I'm confident in Humphreys. I'm confident in maybe even Brown coming in. I don't know exactly how those guys are going to shake out. But I think those guys are players. The great thing about this draft class, and I mentioned this to you, is they are players.
Yeah.
They're not number guys. You know, they're not the best vertical jump, and they're not the tallest, and they're not the fastest. But they'll make every tackle.
They're ball players.
They're ball players.
Okay, some younger guys that, look, I don't think they're bad players, but they've got questions to answer, and I don't know if they're going to answer them or not. I would say Jack Conklin.
Yeah.
Jonnu Smith.
Yeah.
I think those would be the main two that I would look at.
And Jonnu, in my opinion, is maybe the head scratcher because he has been in systems where he's caught a lot of passes, and he's been in systems where he's done in college, I'm talking about.
And he did step up before he got hurt.
He
now,
got
the beginning
better.
Of the season was a disaster.
Yeah, and it's been the mental things with him. And yet I listen to him, you interview him or somebody.
Yeah.
And he sounds like he's the kind of guy that is studying, that is paying attention, that is intelligent, that is. And so you're saying, well, how can you keep getting these dumb penalties? You know, you're too
dropping
smart for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, or dropping the ball or doing, you're too smart for that. So, you know, he's another one of those. If he can jump up there, then again, that will really help you sleep when you're thinking about
the future.
Delaney and his ankle.
And you know, it's a shame, like I said, because after a terrible start where we were debating if he should even play,
suddenly
he's got a 70-yard touchdown in Houston, and he scores a shuttle pass touchdown against the Cowboys. He catches the touchdown on the opening drive against the New England Patriots. You know, he's making plays for you, and you can see the confidence growing, and you're thinking, okay, this will be a step forward to next year. And then he tears the ACL and he's done. And now that's, you know, that was like in November. So he's not on the Conklin timeline, but he's close.
Yeah.
So how much practice is he going to get before the season starts? How much confidence is he going to have when he does get out there?
Yeah. And that's, you know, between he and Delaney, and, you know, now Firkshire's your starter. And
what about Mykole Pruitt? Saluki Great. All-time leading receiver in Southern Illinois history, Floyd.
I know.
Caught a touchdown last year. Should have caught two. He was wide open in London. I mean, wide open. And they didn't throw him the ball.
Oh.
It's all right.
Saluki bias.
So, yeah, a little bit. You know what, though? By what the Titans didn't do, like you've said, and I've talked about, they believe Jonnu and Delaney are going to be okay. But I also think they like Firkser and Pruitt. I mean, Pruitt was a guy that Vrabel knew from Houston, and Firkser caught his eye last year in camp.
Yeah.
He said he gets open, he catches the ball. And when he played, what did he do?
Got open, got the ball.
And yeah. So, you know, he can get bigger, he can get stronger. But, you know, what guys can't do a lot of times, if they can't get open and catch the ball, that's something that never comes. And so I think they like 3 and 4. They like 3 and 4 enough to not bring back Luke Stocker, even though the other two guys are hurt. So as much as it says they believe in those two guys to get healthy, I think it says that they like those two guys at the bottom as well. So,
well, I hope.
What have I always said, Floyd? Hope is not a strategy.
Not a strategy.
A strategy. All right, Smashville. Stop by Bridgestone Arena on Saturday to celebrate you, the best fans in all of sports, from noon to 4 p.m. Enjoy free lunch, a team store sale, face painting. My daughter would love that. Locker room tours and much, much more. We will see you there. One segment to go on Jared and the GM. If you didn't see Vanderbilt's baseball game last night, we're going to touch on that when we return. It was unbelievable. Final segment of the show coming up on Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last segment of Jared and the GM with Corey Curtis from News 2 filling in for Jared Stillman, who's sipping on a mint julep on some fine beach in Arkansas.
Yes, he is.
It's been great today, Floyd. It really has.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this.
I always enjoy talking to you, so getting to do it for 4 hours, I don't know what it's like for you. But for me, it's absolutely a thrill. Speaking of thrills, you know, last night at News 2, we got like 5 TVs, 6 TVs in the sports office, so I watch a variety of things. And one of the things I had on last night was the Vanderbilt-Kentucky baseball game.
Ooh.
And so we start rolling on highlights, because I'm running highlights in the show, and they score 5 in the first. And I'm like, I'm going to just stop rolling, because I got everything I need. And I'm like, well, no, let's get the starting pitcher so we get some B-roll, so we keep rolling. And they're up 9-0, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is such an abomination. I should just turn it off. But I don't. Next thing I look, it's 9-3. And then it's 9-5. And then I look up in the 7th inning, and Kentucky's got the bases loaded. And all of a sudden, it's 10-9 Kentucky, and it's like in the movie The Natural, the thunderbolt comes from the sky, and you're like, what is happening? Vanderbilt was up 9-0, gives up 10 runs in a row, goes to an epic rain delay that lasted over an hour. And then when they come back on the field, what happens? They outscore them 7-0 and win the game 16-10. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I don't know that I've ever seen it go that dramatic, that drastic. You know, from 9-0 to all of a sudden you're behind. How do you get behind 9-0?
And then we outscore them 7-0 when you come back.
And turn around afterwards. I heard Coach Corbin was talking about it, and he said that, you know, during that couple-hour rain delay, however long it was, he said they kind of, you know, rededicated themselves. They kind of say, hey, you know what? We're better than this. That is not who we are. And,
play nine innings, and never let up.
Yeah,
you hear coaches say all these things.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
And for whatever reason, you know, Coach Corbin seems to be able to get those things across. I take him as kind of a no-nonsense guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think whenever he says something, their ears perk up. You know, they kind of go, oh, okay, I got you, coach. And I think because of that, you know, when he says, hey, that's not us. Whoever was playing those last couple of innings, that's not us. Let's go out there and play like, you know, we can play.
It's kind of like when the Cubs beat the Indians in the World Series.
Yeah.
When it was falling apart and they went to that rain delay, Jason Hayward got everybody together and said, guys, none of this matters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it says – I mean, you've been a part of one of the great collapses, unfortunately, in the NFL with that Oilers loss in Buffalo. And you know, once the genie's out of the bottle, it's tough to put him back in there. And I think it says a lot about that baseball team that they were able to stuff the genie back in the bottle, lock the lid down, and throw it in the trash.
And the part that is so amazing, like in our situation, was, you know, we're ahead by a ton. Come out in the second half, first thing we do is intercept a pass. We're back for a touch.
I watched that game, man. You know, I'll never forget it.
And we're going, okay, let's go. And
it was over.
It turned around, and they score once, and you think, how did that look pretty easy? That, you know, what happened?
Our lead's way too big.
Yeah.
Was it 38-3?
38-3. I think that's probably right. It's 35
45, points. 45-41, something like that.
Yeah.
That's just
unbelievable. And they just kept coming and coming.
Was there a point in that thing where you just knew there's no way we can stop this, or do you?
Here was the interesting thing about that whole game is that the week before, or a couple weeks before, we played an overtime game, and Jack didn't take the wind. No, he took the wind, and we lost the game. So when we got into this game and we came out second half, he went against the wind, thinking that, okay, we'll get the wind in the fourth quarter, and that'll be the difference. The problem was we couldn't get a first down in the third quarter. And every time they got the ball, they scored.
Yeah. Couldn't stop them. So, that was a bigger problem.
That was it. Couldn't stop them.
Couldn't stop Frank Reich.
And so, yeah. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He's hurt me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's going to get personal here pretty quick.
all those years with the coaches show, that game with Mike Munchak, just couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Couldn't talk about it. And, you know, I haven't been there on that level, but I've been a part of some tough beats, and I get it. I get it when you got it all right there, because you guys thought you were Super Bowl champions that year.
Oh, yeah.
So
I mean, and we were on our way. I mean, we had a good team.
There are a lot of Hall of Famers on that team.
Yeah, good team.
Somebody knew what they were doing when they put that one together.
Yeah. Mike Olivak, boy, he was good.
Floyd, fantastic. Have a great weekend.
Enjoy
any big plans?
It. You too. No, I think we're going to kind of chill. You know, it's supposed to be 90 degrees. I think I'll enjoy that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've told you, but I'll tell everybody. My wife and I are competing in the Chattanooga Half Ironman Sunday morning. We get in the water about 6:30, 7 o'clock Central Time. If you want to follow me on the Ironman website, I'm number 2954. Or you can just type in my name, and you can say, man, Corey's slow. Or just know that I'm still out there, and it's really hot.
Oh, that's fantastic, though. I'm proud of you. I mean, that's tough duty.
Well, the reason I do it, because I see this guy still turning in 8 miles every day. You know what? It's been a thrill today. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed
it, too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Have a great weekend. Say hi to Sally for me.
I will.
All right, this has been Corey Curtis from News 2, filling in for Jared Stillman on the beaches of Arkansas. We hope he has a great weekend as well. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Have a great weekend.